This is episode 25 of Trash Talking with Eco Warriors featuring Jean DuPont from Rockaway Waterfront Alliance.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
If you've lived in New York City or even visited, you'll know that one of the most incredible parts about the summer is going out to the Rockaways, a beachfront area south of Manhattan and Brooklyn. This area is a gorgeous waterfront that is prone to illegal dumping and destruction. Well, at least it was until people like Jean actually started doing something about that. Through activating the youth in the area, Jean was able to help protect the land and allow the local youth to connect with it as well. Jean DuPont is the founder and also executive director of Rockaway Waterfront Alliance, as well as RISE. A friend of mine told me about a yoga and beach cleanup at an event at RWA was hosting with Patagonia, and I signed up immediately. It was a beautiful morning, and in the span of just an hour and a half, I was able to pick up 10 pounds of trash from the beach that morning. It's crazy because it didn't really seem like the area had much to clean, but as soon as you started, it was really hard to stop. There was so much to find in the sand and along the dunes. I couldn't think of a better way to spend my Saturday. And, shameless announcement, there's another beach cleanup coming up on Saturday, September 14th from 11 to 1 p.m. at the Rockaways. Details can be found on the RWA website or by clicking on the link in the show notes. I'll be there, and I hope to see you there as well. Come say hi and help clean up the Rockaways after a long and beautiful summer. Without further ado, let's get trash talking.
So my name is Jean DuPont. I'm the executive director of the Rockaway Waterfront Alliance and RISE. Founded the organization back in 2006 and have been doing all kinds of programs and things related to the environment and community development since then.
Wow, amazing. So tell us, what is the Rockaway Waterfront Alliance for someone who might not know?
The Rockaway Waterfront Alliance is a youth development organization focused on take on a lot of issues that are very local and related to the local community. Some of it relates to coastal restoration, and some of it relates to deeper issues related to social justice issues, transportation equity. So a lot of the kids that are in our program take on some of these projects, and as a result, get an opportunity to work with a lot of government agencies and learn about different jobs in various fields, from urban planning to medical science, life science, things like that. So it's a broad mix, but it's a great opportunity to get youth involved in some issues here in the Rockaways.
So then you founded it back in 2006. I'd love to kind of like hear the origin story.
So one of the things, I guess, that first started or kicked this off was, you know, I was never formally trained as an urban planner, but I had organized a lot of my neighbors and friends to do a cleanup. And as I was doing that, I realized that a lot of the young people that were in our neighborhood had been born, you know, in other countries. A lot of them didn't have a lot of support and didn't really understand kind of what public space was, didn't really understand what it meant to have access to public lands, including parks and including public spaces within the neighborhood. So a lot of them had watched kind of the neighborhood being dumped with construction debris and watched a lot of development that was happening illegally out here. So at one point, we started actively engaging them in some of these projects. And what I realized was, over a very short amount of time, that some of those kids started taking action in a way that was kind of unexpected. Some of them brought out cameras and started documenting some of the work in a way that, you know, we had not told them to do, or no, they had never been instructed to do. They just started doing it. And I think they realized soon that they actually had a lot of power that they didn't understand that they, or realize that they had. And that was to give a voice to their community. Contractors, once they started seeing things being documented and started asking, what are you doing with those photographs? Who are you going to, like, share that with? Once it became apparent that they were
going to share that with the legal authorities, they got very nervous. And it stopped. A lot of the debris, a lot of the illegal dumping stopped immediately. And I realized that actually from that one day, that if we multiply that times a year or a month or a, you know, multiple years, that we could actually make some great strides. So I thought it was just a great opportunity to take advantage of. And I said, I think we should start developing some of these programs. So I started partnering up with schools in Rockaway and really working closely with them to spearhead public space and public parks and getting the kids actively involved in doing things related to urban planning and coastal restoration. And almost 15 years later, we've been able to accomplish quite a lot just by having the young people and high school students that are here in Rockaway really have a say in their own communities and really understand how city government works so that they can play a role in that. So that's pretty much how it started.
That's awesome. And so how have you seen it evolve over time? Like, I know that you have RIDE now, which kind of seems like a subset off of RWA. But I'd love to hear kind of like how it's changed and how you've been able to like evolve the program over time.
I mean, what's nice about it is now we have had partnerships with organizations and schools that we've had over a very long period of time. So it changes because it makes it much easier now. Like a lot of the conversations and a lot of, you know, we're not having to go to school randomly and introduce ourselves. Now we have deeper relationships with schools and with teachers and with agencies, government agencies. So it's not uncommon for universities or, you know, elementary schools, different kinds of government agencies to come to us and ask that we participate or partner on projects with them, which is really nice. So that makes things much, much easier, but then it also makes it richer for a lot of the kids. Some of the kids have been in our programs for anywhere from 5 to 7 years, and so many times they come back. So now over a longer period of time, we've actually had an opportunity to see those kids come back and work with us or come back and, you know, mentor other young people in the program. So I think in that case, it's just become a really nice opportunity to be able to continue our work and expand on it. And it's always new, you know, the relationships and the partnerships have developed, but then we also many times are working on new projects with those organizations each year. So that's really fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I heard about your project was coming to a beach cleanup in conjunction with Patagonia, which is a pretty big and amazing sponsorship, right? Like everyone's heard of Patagonia. Yeah. It's a fantastic event. And I love the space. I love the green wall that you guys have in the back. So it's clear that you're kind of like thinking through this like very holistically and really like diversifying through the types of programs and offerings that you're giving the people who are involved in the community.
Yeah. And those plantings, you know, the benefit for them is that a lot of those young people then are developing their skills, even just interpersonal skills. Learning to communicate, you know, with young people or with adults and to be able to talk about the work that they've done. Sometimes it's putting them on the spot to ask them, like, what are you doing here? And what's this project that you're working on? But I would say many times after years looking back, a lot of those kids then have had an opportunity to reflect back. Many times they'll put that on their college essays or they'll reflect about kind of the impact that some of these spaces or some of these projects have had on their deciding on a career or making decisions about places that they want to go to study. So that's been great.
Yeah, that's amazing. What kind of sparked this for you? So, like, I'd love to hear more about, like, your background and how you kind of got into this. You said, you know, you're not a city planner, but, like, what was it that you were doing before RWA?
Yeah, so I actually changed careers. So I was a costume designer for film, and before that I was a fashion designer in the fashion industry. To me, like actually when I came to Rockaway and I looked at the city and I was looking at some of the spaces, I was really disheartened because I saw that so many of the parks that were here were a wreck, right? Like nobody was maintaining them, nobody was caring for them. So I started to look at some of those vacant spaces and realize that they really could be developed as safe parks or as safe places for children. I had been trained as stage designer, so I learned costume design, stage design, set design. And so I really started to look at some of these spaces more as a, say, as a theatrical production. But if you were to take regular everyday people and place them into a space, how could that space be used? So that's kind of how I saw a lot of the spaces in Rockaway, even natural spaces, was more as a place where activities took place, right? Usually if you're looking at a stage production, you're designing that set for whatever the activity is that's going to take place on stage, right? Whether somebody's getting married or somebody's sick, or, you know, that you need the props and the stage to satisfy that. But in real life, it's the same thing, right? You have a corner lot where people are passing. Maybe you need benches. Maybe you need garbage cans. Like, what is it that the people in the community need for those spaces? So that's kind of how I see things very often. And, you know, I don't know if most people visualize things that way, but I see a lot when I look at a space that most people say, oh, there's nothing there. And I'm like, well, look again, look a little bit harder. Who are the people that are wandering that area? Are they old? Are they young? Do they need help? Do they need services? What would make their life easier? And so that's kind of how I really got started, was trying to visualize that. I also had had 2 children at that point, and so my life was very different. I wasn't really that interested in leaving my family for long periods of time to go work on a movie. I really wanted to stay close to home. And so when I came to Rockaway, I actually came while I was working on a film, and I fell in love with it. And I, you know, my husband thought I was crazy, and he said, like, why do you want to go to this place? It's, you know, really run down. And we had a lot of gang violence and a lot of serious, you know, drug addiction, and dog fighting and all kinds of stuff that was going on. It was seemingly very dangerous, but I really fell in love with it because I just felt like there was this mix of people that is pretty unusual, especially for a coastal community. I had grown up in Massachusetts, in a small clamming town that was very, very isolated, and I felt like there was some of the same beauty, but there was a very different kind of community here that I really thought could really benefit from learning more about their environment and learning to use that space for themselves. So, I mean, I really just kind of plugged in my own experience and started really grassroots organizing. I started, you know, visualizing some of those parks and public spaces and getting the elected officials and getting the community members to come to the table and fight for to do something, to force these elected officials to do stuff. So it is kind of interesting that I really have no experience doing community organizing or urban planning, but I've kind of fallen into that. And then I also established some really, along the way, I met some really good people, professors and others at Pratt Institute and Parsons. And even though I had been an undergrad at Parsons in fashion, you know, I don't think a lot of the careers that are happening in colleges today were happening back when I was in school. So I didn't know anything about urban planning. I didn't know anything about environmental design. That was in existence back then, but I really didn't know what it was. And so it's just interesting now to see Parsons and Pratt being, you know, kind of the hubs for a lot of that kind of work to be happening. So it's kind of interesting to be working with them now and in a totally different capacity.
I mean, that's super cool, right? Because it, like, came back full circle for you almost.
Yeah. I mean, and there are times where I sit in those classrooms and think about, like, how different it is being a student versus seeing this stuff firsthand happening in communities and being able to react to it. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, because you came from this kind of, like, smaller community and it sounds like a very well-kept community in terms of, like, the actual environment, that that's what kind of drove you to want to do something similarly. But what do you think it was, like, did you have, like, a moment or what about the environment kind of, like, inspired you? Because I think it is very different to come from, you know, film to working on, like, sustainability.
Well, the thing that's interesting is if you look around Rockaway, right, there's, like, to me, I always look at things as opportunities. So when you look around, you see a beach that's neglected or been blocked and gated. You know, there were miles and miles of the waterfront that were fenced off and were shut off for folks on the east end of the Rockaways, right? And so my first question was, well, why? Why is the beach on the west end open and not the beach on the east end? And then as I started to dig deeper, I realized that it was because everybody was kind of complacent. Nobody was really speaking up and saying, hey, you know, like, why is my beach shut? Why can't my kid come and play football here? Why can't they go play on the beach, right?
And it was because nobody was speaking up that I realized that there were huge social justice issues. Also, Rockaway's out of sight, out of mind, right? So a lot of people don't even know the issues that go on here on the ground. And so that was one of the other issues. When I had one of the very first things that I did was we were rallying, our neighbors were rallying against a high-rise building that had gone up along the shoreline. And, you know, I organized a bunch of neighbors and we protested. And this neighbor came over to me and he said, you know, I don't like the fact that this building's going up either, but we don't have the power to do anything. And right then I realized that what he meant by power was money. And I said, this has nothing to do with money. I said, you have power. And you, if you organize your neighbors and you make a big enough stink, we can get some change here, but we got to organize. We got to do it together. And so he said, well, I'm all for it. You can count me in. But, you know, it's stuff like that where people are just wandering around here kind of saying nobody cares about us. It was like a real sense of hopelessness. And I thought I'd never seen anything like it. I had never seen a place where people were so divided by race and class. I had never experienced some of this. I mean, even being white myself, I had a lot of neighbors and other people who didn't believe me or didn't trust that I was, you know, there for them or that I had other intentions, right? It's only because I've been doing this for such a long time that I've been able to kind of bridge some of that and build relationships with people who now know that I'm not there for the money. It's not self-serving for me. So I think it takes a long, long time for people to build trust in this community. But without it, you know, there's nothing, you can't do anything. And I've realized actually for all this time that it takes way more time to get to accomplish even little, you know, milestones. So this building took 10 years. And once I got halfway through it, it was like 5 years. And then I think Sandy hit. And I remember thinking, oh my God, finally we're going to get some attention, right? That finally people are going to pay attention. And instead, I didn't hear from the city. I didn't hear from anybody that I had been working with in the city for well over 6 to 8 months. Not a word, not nothing. It was just like the whole city had shut down and was so focused on just trying to resolve issues that were really, you know, urgent in their mind. But we were off the map. And so it was really hard. And I thought, oh my God, what had just happened? And so all the things I thought were going to happen didn't. And it almost was like starting over again. And at that point, I thought I either can walk away and just give up, or I have to just dig deeper and keep going. And so that's what I did, but it was really hard. And it was, you know, way, way worse than I ever imagined it would have been in terms of how hard it would have been to have gotten this building up and running like this. So I would not recommend it to other people. I think it's a really hard thing unless you have 10 years to dedicate to something. But I also see a lot of people who have taken on things and have been in it for even longer than I have and still not even gotten to like the first small part of a renovation done. So I think it's really hard work, renovating buildings and working with the city and getting funding, either from the city or fundraising from, you know, privately. It's a very, very difficult thing. And it was only because I was up against the wall where I really couldn't walk away from it that I followed through, because I didn't have the heart to leave and to say, I'm sorry, but I can't do this anymore. It's hard.
You just went over so many things that I like wanted to ask about how you guys were able to fund such a project of this scale.
Well, so, you know, I think it was because I was ignorant and didn't know, you know, I wasn't a developer, so I really didn't know how long it takes to develop a building. And I clearly remember meeting with a contractor, and he told me, that's going to cost you $4 million to renovate that building. And I said, oh, that's ridiculous. It's not going to cost that. And he said, well, how much do you think it's going to cost? And I said, well, I think it'll be about $1.5 million. And then before I knew it, he was right. It was going to be $4 million. And so that's why I said we got halfway down the road and realized, like, oh, my God, I thought I needed to raise $1.5 million, and now I got to raise $4 million because the costs and all of the things that we got it was going to cost were way different. So no one was really there to guide me. No one was really there to walk me through what things really cost. And because it's the city of New York, everything costs way more than you anticipate it. You know, if we were in the middle of Kansas, it might have been very different, but the city of New York was not helpful. And there were a lot of things that they made even far more difficult.
you know, plans had been drawn up. I think we ended up paying for architectural plans twice, not once, but twice. The first time before Storm Sandy and then the second time after Sandy, because so many things had changed that we realized all the systems had to be on the second floor. And then there was discussion of LEED certification. And I said, I don't even care about LEED certification. I just want this building done. So we didn't, you know, those are decisions you have to make along the way is are we or are we not going to make this a historical building and, you know, renovate everything according to LEED certification. So I think it was, you know, it's like just along the way, you just got to make decisions. And the longer it takes to make those decisions, sometimes the harder it is, you know, or you lose opportunities. Certain windows open and then they close if you haven't made those decisions. We also, you know, I don't know if you know what a new market tax credit is, but people were trying to guide me down the road of getting new market tax credits. And we had a lot of banks who were really interested in our project after Sandy and not prior to Sandy. And I was very fortunate that somebody actually came to me and said, let me give you some advice. Don't do that. And at first I didn't hear him and I kept saying, oh, but it's such a great deal. And he was like, no, it's not a great deal. New market tax credits are for huge projects and they really will suck all of the energy out of you. And most of the money is going to go to a bunch of attorneys, you know, walk away from the new market and forget about it. And so when I did that, we had to redesign the entire building on account of that for it to be smaller and to get it done. So, you know, every step of the way was a different challenge. And unfortunately, I was pretty much like the only man standing by the end of the project. All the city agencies, all the government officials, all the people that I met with week in, week out, by the 10th year, almost none of them were the same people. Almost none of them were still working for the city. So I was pretty much the only person who had that knowledge and history of what we had agreed to from the beginning all the way to the end. And that was kind of an interesting experience too, because you don't know that when you're starting a project. You assume everybody's going to be sitting there, you know, talking about the same things, but no. And that, what that means is that means you have to explain everything to the next person who starts the job and comes in halfway through the project and say, oh, no, this is what we agreed to, and this here's the paperwork to back that up. So I learned a lot. Wow. I mean, I really did. I'm not a developer, but now I certainly know an awful lot about development and how it works. And it's not an easy field, and it's not one that I enjoyed actually a lot of it. Having had a design background, I really loved kind of getting into the details, the architecture. I was able to read the plans, having done stage, you know, design and sets. I could read the plans and understand things. And I did have quite a lot to do, actually, with many of the drawings and even the landscape architecture for our garden. I was able to really kind of walk through with everybody all the details and making sure that it was what we really wanted. So in that sense, it was actually great. You know, I really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, and so it sounds like you've definitely had a lot of challenges and overcome them successfully, which is amazing. What kind of keeps you going in those times of challenge and difficulty?
So it's interesting. I had a young woman, one of the first students that we ever had in our program. When I met her, she was 12 years old. She was in middle school at PS 43. She was one of the students. And she stayed in our program for a long, long time. And I think she was a senior in high school, and at that point she had become a CIT in her summer program. And I remember we were working in the garden. We had a summer camp program in the garden, and the firehouse was right next to us, and it was under construction. And I remember we had a visitor. I don't remember who it was, but we had a funder or site visit with somebody, and they came, and she literally said to them, that's our building, and we're going to be, that's going to be a community center, and we're going to do all these programs. And she literally, like, recited everything I had been saying for so many years, and it was at that point where I just said, I can't do this. You know, I can't break their heart, and I can't tell them that it's not going to happen. It has to happen. So I think it's moments like that where I thought, I don't have a choice. Like, there's no way out for me. I just have to finish this project and stay to the very end, because what was I going to do? You know, tell her, like, I'm sorry, but this isn't going to happen. So I just didn't have the heart. So I think it was stuff like that that kept me going. You know, and my husband, I would say to him, I can't just step away because there's no way out for me. Right. There's no way. I have to finish this project because nobody else will be able to step in to know all the details. So, and, you know, frankly, I know, so I don't know if you know, but there were four firehouses that Michael Bloomberg allocated to nonprofits. And of those four firehouses, only ours was completed, and there's another one that's being completed in Harlem presently. The other two never got transferred to the organizations. The organizations actually went belly up, and they were never able to be turned over. So those buildings are still sitting vacant as we speak. And so I think on one hand, it was a great idea that Bloomberg had to do this, but I also think, you know, it's very rare for a nonprofit to be able to sustain themselves through something like this. And yeah. So I think that it should have come with money. Like, the building should have been awarded to an organization, and the capital dollar should have come as well, because otherwise it's just a cruel joke. You know, you get halfway through it and realize this money is not going to be dropped in your bank, you know, the week after it's awarded. Instead, you have to actually physically do the work and then get reimbursed. And how many people can do that, right? So if you're doing a $1.5 million construction project, that means you need $1.5 million in the bank. And that money you're not going to have unless you either have some kind of incredible loan or, you know, and so if you don't have that money in the bank, there's no way to pay the contractors to do that work. And it took me a long time to understand that, like to figure that out. I was like, oh, my God. Just because they awarded us the building doesn't mean we get the building until the construction is done, until all of the work that we said we're going to do is completed, and then you get reimbursed. And the reimbursement does not happen right away. The reimbursement happens years after it. So you can only imagine, like, the amount of strain and stress if this is the first time you're finding this out is after you've already started. So it's crazy, actually. It's really crazy. I don't know. I know there's a couple of projects like the firehouse, I think, in Broad Channel. For years, they've wanted to, you know, get an updated building, like a firehouse, right, for firemen. And every time I see things being allocated, I feel like unless they have an army of people or financial analysts who can walk through the budgets and stuff, they're going to have a very hard time doing that. So, but I think because I was one person and my board supported me, I actually was able to pull it off. Whereas sometimes when you have a nonprofit organization, you have a lot of people kind of questioning things and getting involved and kind of putting their nose into one thing and not following through. I think that's what happened with the other nonprofits, is I think, frankly, there were too many cooks in the kitchen. And in my case, I was the only cook in the kitchen, and my board supported me and stood behind me. So that made a huge difference. And I noticed that a lot of times when I see things that have taken place, that it takes one person to really lead and stay the course for the entire time. Otherwise, it's very difficult.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. Well, congrats. That's like, it's a amazing work that you've done and everything that you've been able to achieve. Just for someone who maybe isn't like familiar with the Rockaways area, why is this sustainably significant? Like, why is the sustainability and like the preservation of this area important?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't know if you know Klaus Jacobs, but Klaus Jacobs is a scientist, climate change scientist, and he believes in what they refer to as strategic retreat. So he actually believes that Rockaway in less than 20 years will be completely underwater, and I agree with him. And the hard thing about that is that as much as that's been proven, that probably will be true, the city doesn't seem to be in a position, or they're not making decisions. They don't want to make decisions for people by scaring them or telling them, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave or you're going to have to move, right? Nobody wants to make those statements. But in many ways, I guess when I look at the peninsula, I think, well, you know what, even if we were under in 20 years, like, let's make the best of this. Let's try and find ways to use this land for other purposes. And in my eyes, it's for educational purposes. If it's in our best interest just to use this land for educational purposes, then that's enough for me. Like, I'm not big on developing buildings or building spaces, building structures. I think utilizing public land, utilizing public space, neglected, underutilized space for whatever purpose the community needs is not only sustainable but beneficial to a community. And this is an area that people have given up on, right? Everybody abandoned the Rockaways, right? They dumped on the Rockaways. They moved people in public housing here without them wanting to be come here, right? People in the 60s didn't ask to be put in the Rockaways. It was just that Robert Moses started building public housing here and literally, you know, built Lincoln Center and moved everybody here. So they didn't ask to come here. But once they got here, the unfortunate thing was that they didn't build any services or programs for people, which is where I came in, was I thought that it was absolutely cruel what had happened, was that, you know, the city decided to move everybody here with no medical services, no mental health services, and not nearly enough facilities for children or for education. And I kept thinking, I don't understand why this happened. Like, how did this happen and why? And now I know that it was entirely racist and entirely because the city just didn't care. And so so that's where, when I look at this space, when you talk about sustainability, you know, to me, there's not very much that's going on here that's sustainable. And every day, a lot of the projects that we have the kids working on are, you know, plantings or you know, restoration to the shoreline or creating a bike and pedestrian path or confronting some of the issues with transportation or the lack thereof. Like, there's got to be a way to use these situations to benefit the young people and the community in the end, and to teach them how to engage in city government. So that's more of my concern, because the truth is I don't think there's very much here that will be sustained long term. I think people forget so quickly that, you know, we might plant a bunch of trees and then the next week the city's out here cutting them down. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, nobody's really, really looking closely at the sustainability issue. But frankly, you know, as Klaus Jacobs has said, Rockaway, frankly, is just protecting for the next 20 years the New York City shoreline and JFK Airport. But in the future, Brooklyn will be the next shoreline for New York City, right? And so it's just going to keep moving back and back and back. And just over a matter of time, this whole area will, you know, will have a hard time staying the course. But, you know, I see little, you know, small commitments by the city saying, well, we're going to raise this roadway up or we're going to improve this here for the moment. They're doing it, but they're doing it so small. Like, the efforts are just not really 100% committed to really helping. And so, you know, in my eyes, the only thing that I really can do is just think about some of the smaller things that we can do. And so the work that we're doing really is just the small things, right? Like, using this land for education, that's fine by me. And that's enough. If that's all we get out of it, then that's enough for me. But is it going to save the peninsula? Absolutely not. But yeah. And I think as a result, you know, the thing that's so beneficial to me is, you know, originally, when you talk to people who have been here for a long, long time and grew up here, they talk about kind of the hard times. They talk about the time when a lot of the businesses were torn down and the bungalows were torn down. And one of the things that I think is so bright now is when I look at a lot of the young people that have been in our programs or have come through our doors, you know, and I see them going out in the world. We have one day in particular when we have all the kids who have been in our program Skype in, do a Google chat. And they call in from Japan and Ireland and upstate New York and Alabama and all over the country. And it's incredible to see them, that they're now adults and they're going out in the world. They're not necessarily just coming back to Rockaway, but they're out there. And a lot of times they have used what they learned here with us, you know, and used it to motivate them in their careers. So, again, I just feel like it's a great, you know, it's a great thing to see that happening. And you know, whether they'll ever come back to help the community someday, you know, remains to be seen. But I think it's, again, it's enough for me to see that they are the product, you know, these very smart and articulate, very diverse community of people.
Yeah, that's awesome. What would you say has been, I don't know, some of your, like, funniest stories or, like, biggest wins that you've had?
I mean, just that, I think, what I just talked about, that's the biggest win, right? To see a kid that grew up here and had no place. I would say, you know, the just being able to introduce them to the ocean or being able to introduce them to things that maybe they never considered before, or career, I think is really exciting. And I think, you know, almost every summer I have a conversation with some 15-year-old. And at the end of the day, we usually do what they call highs and lows, and we'll ask the kids, what was your greatest high and what was your lowest low? And many, many times in the summer, I'll have a 15-year-old who'll tell me, today was the first day I ever swam in the ocean, and I've lived here my whole life, and I've never, you know, experienced that. And so, you know, those are the wins. Like, those are the really great days where I think, you know, it's all worth it just for that, because that will change their life, right? Some of them then go back and decide they're going to join the swim team to learn to really swim, or they're going to take surf classes. And, you know, so to me, it's never just about the ocean or about the water, but it's just a small part of the Rockaways and the experience here. I think there's also a lot of isolation and a lot of mental illness that comes with that isolation. So there's a lot of downsides to being in a place like this as well, because it's a really rough terrain. But I do think that the character of the people who grow up here are much more resilient than your average, you know, small town, given the fact that they have to be, because they have to be better prepared. And they also have built a more resilient community that depends on one another. They've built small networks and social networks within, you know, even our programs or working with seniors. So that's the stuff that makes me feel really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And for someone out there who is interested in getting more involved or kind of helping with the project, how can they get involved? How can they get, you know, a little bit more acclimated with what's going on there and get involved with the platform?
So we have a great website. They can go to rwalliance.org, and we're actually going to be our building is named RISE, but we ourselves are also transferring our name over to RISE. It allows us more capacity to work in community development as opposed to just waterfront issues. But everything's on our website, rwalliance.org, and it's the community programs and after school and summer programs for young people. And it's all laid out there and pretty easy for people to find out more. So, yeah, so I encourage people to come to it.
Cool, awesome. Well, thank you again so much for taking the time to talk to us about the project. It's super amazing and inspiring to hear about something that's really persisted throughout the years, and I think right now very much so positioned in a place of need. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. All right. Thanks so much.
I'm so inspired by the longevity of a project that started by just one individual 15 years ago. Everyone likes to say that famous motivational quote about how one person can really make a difference, but it's people like Jean that really make me think about how true this quote can ring. Hope to see you in a few weeks at the Rockaway Beach Cleanup, where you too can help make a difference. Put on your swimsuit, come enjoy one last weekend at the beach before we close out the season. Happy Labor Day weekend, and tune in again in a couple of weeks where we will have more inspiring stories from eco warriors around the world. In the meantime, definitely leave us a review, click and rate us 5 stars if you're enjoying the content, and consider becoming one of our sponsors. For as little as 99 cents a month, you can help sponsor the content that makes a difference. Thanks again, and stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at TrashyBeautyCo.